Welcome to the Business of Family Business. I'm your host, Ryan Recker, and a very special edition of this program for you today. We're joined with CMA Consulting's Dan Bean, who presents this program, and we're going to look back at some of those stories where family businesses across the St. Louis region talk about how adapting to changes in the industry not only affected their company, but also how it changed their company in the generations after. You're going to hear from great companies like Winco Windows, Niebling Auto, Metro Lighting, Jim Butler Chevrolet, Johnny Mack's, Walter Knoll Florist, OK Hatchery, Booksource, Kriegshauser Brothers, and Lori Shoes, as they all share their insights and stories on this special edition of the Business of Family Business. Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. A lot of businesses, if they're around for decades and sometimes even centuries, have to find a way to adapt because the markets adapt. Can you talk about some of those ways you've seen businesses adapt?
Businesses have to adapt to two kinds of changes. We call them continuous change and discontinuous change. Sometimes they're called type 1 change and type 2. So type 1 and continuous are synonymous. Type 2 and discontinuous are synonymous. So type 1 or continuous change is when something gets larger or smaller. It's like our business grows, we add another manufacturing line, or we add on to the warehouse. A discontinuous change is a transformational change. We become something different. There is a fundamental change, and we can't continue to be what we were.
In this first segment, let's hear from Winco Windows and Niebling Auto Repair. First, Winco Windows. It's a different industry, I'm guessing, from when you guys first started. When you took over, let's say, in the 1980s, is it completely look different than it is today?
It is very much so, and a lot of the difference comes from all the products that are being required here. You know, we have this new big, great big facility. It's going to be built in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, mm-hmm. and we'd love to do that job because it's they're probably going to want blast resistant or ballistic resistant windows, and of course super energy efficient windows. Yeah. But I'm getting off track, but it's we're excited. It has changed a lot, primarily because the jobs have gotten bigger, mm-hmm. more complicated, and the regulations and the review have become much more onerous. There, mm-hmm. you know, if I would go back 40 years ago when I first got involved with Winco, you could order a window and expect to see it, a custom window, and within 3-4 weeks. Today, on a project like this, you order the windows. You have to make drawings of all the window openings. You have to get various people approve it, and this could be a 6 or 9 month period. Hmm. And so you have all these different hurdles that you're going through. And then the other thing that's really changed is the regulations from codes and so forth. If we were to get a product approved 40 years ago, mm-hmm. we'd probably just say this is what the product can do. Now we have to go through a testing and validation process that literally costs hundreds of thousands of dollars on every product that mm-hmm. we offer to the marketplace, and you have to have the support staff to go through all this.
Wow, I think about companies here in town. I think about Boeing says they want to go up in space. Would you ever say, I want to make the windows for that spaceship? Could you do those type of windows?
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's exciting, isn't it?
Yes.
Those are probably the things that keep you going, thinking about stuff like that.
That'd be fun.
You know, how much of your mindset is, you know, that would be fun to try? Does that motivate you to say, I want to keep innovating and doing things like that?
Absolutely. I think the day is not far away where a window will not only be something to let you know, fresh air in or in stale air out, mm-hmm. and have beautiful views and let the sun in, where it's going to become an energy source, mm-hmm. instead of an energy drain. And I'm even talking about, and we played around putting little plugs on the side of a window so that you could charge your phone there.
Mm-hmm.
And we have windows that have photovoltaic cells on them,
mm-hmm.
And battery packs in them so that they can operate. You know, they can open by themselves. They can the shades can go up and down by themselves. So we're trying to push the new frontier in that area all the time.
Big thanks to Winco Windows for joining us. Now, adapting to changes in the industry, it's Niebling Auto with their story. When it comes to a business that changes, because the industry changes a lot, automobiles, I mean, I even think from when I was growing up, just little things like cranking those windows down compared to now, almost it's voice activated. You can probably say, roll the window down, and it'll do it here in the future. How hard is it to keep up on everything the automobile industry is throwing at you?
It's not easy. I mean, we spend time in classes and clinics every year.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, they're easier to diagnose, and in other ways, mm-hmm. they're much, much more difficult.
Right.
I mean, the computers are helping us diagnose them, but there's a myth out there that we plug in and ask a computer and tells us what part's bad.
Mm-hmm.
The computer will generate a number, and that number tells us what troubleshooting tree to use to find the problem.
Right.
But it doesn't tell us what it takes to fix a car.
Most likely to least likely, or something like that. Not quite.
No. There's just an old story about if a car manufacturer developed a troubleshooting chart for your house, if you came in and flipped on a light and it didn't come on, they'd have you go out and shinny up the pole and measure the voltage at the pole and then ohm out the wire from the pole to the house.
Yeah.
And then ohm out the fuse or circuit breaker, and then ohm out the wire from the circuit breaker to the switch, and then ohm out the switch to the fixture.
Uh-huh.
Really change the light bulb.
Thank you. That's exactly right.
What about your side, Abby, on the business side? Lots of different trends happen in business. They start to advertise in different ways. They start to get their name out in different ways. What's your role in the company? What are some of the things that you're doing? How have you seen that change over the years?
So my title, if you have to pick one, would be shop manager.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of wear a lot of different hats. I work, help my mom in the office doing some of the bookkeeping things.
Yeah.
A year and a half ago, taking the company from carbon copy invoices, where, you know, we kept the hard copy on file in about 20 filing cabinets with as many customers as we've had over the years, to now doing, you know, online electronic ticketing.
Mm-hmm.
That has been a very big challenge, getting the guys at the shop to kind of work with the new technology. You know, you can give them any technology that plugs into a car and they'll be, you know, using it like a pro in a few days, but try and getting them to type in a customer's name and phone number on the keyboard and hit save. And remember to hit save. That could be a challenge. So we're definitely testing if we can teach an old dog new tricks.
You know,
sorry, Dad.
Great story from Niebling Auto. In the next segment, we'll look at how Metro Lighting and Jim Butler Chevrolet were able to adapt to the changes in the industry on this special edition of the Business of Family Business presented by CMA Consulting. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. Welcome back to the Business of Family Business. I'm your host, Ryan Recker, and thanks to all of our family businesses that have joined us on this program. If you're a family business and have a story to share, we would love to hear from you. Reach out to Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. CMAconsult.com is their website, and just let them know you're interested in being highlighted on this program. In this segment, we'll hear from Metro Lighting and Jim Butler Chevrolet. Before, we were talking about how companies adapt to changes in the industry. There's different types of changes.
So in a discontinuous change, it changes our relationship to the customer, to vendors, to others. It changes our relationship to the marketplace. It changes our identity and who we are. And another impact of discontinuous change, it tends to take all competitors and move them back to the starting line or ground zero so that all the competitive advantages before the change all of a sudden get erased, and now everybody is starting from ground zero, or maybe even the dominant player in the past has a legacy of that that all of a sudden is no longer an advantage, it's a disadvantage.
In this segment first, let's hear from Metro Lighting as they share their story about adapting to changes in the industry.
But when that customer walks through the door and wants a light fixture or wants a roll of wire, you know, they better get treated right by our employees. And we train our employees about customer service, and they do a great job. Mm-hmm. I mean, we stumble at times, but it's all about customer service. You could have 1,000 moving parts, but when the rubber hits the street, it's the customer and our employee, and you got to have that right also.
In a digital world, too, when people are so easy to, they'll take something and run with it, it's probably very important that you offer customer service, probably in the advent of the internet.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Yeah, that changes a lot of it, too. I bet, Sarah, in that case, customer service becomes ultimately, for you guys, very important to reach out and stay actively talking to your customers.
It's a huge part, especially with the review-based websites that are out there. Mm-hmm. Because most of the time, if you have a great experience, you leave happy and
you don't say
you're
anything.
Great.
Yeah.
But if you have if something, you know, rubbed you the wrong way, or if, you know, your light fixture didn't come in when we said it would, people are sore and they lash out on the internet. And so it's very important that we try our best to make everything right. And I think that we do a good job bending over backwards, trying to make something that was wrong right.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's so important and crucial to our business. And we have 150 employees, and you know, each review, it really is a huge bullet. Mm-hmm. If it's negative. So we have to
encourage people
best.
To leave positive comments, especially
right.
if they have a positive experience. It's
right.
not always easy, because if you're happy, you don't normally do anything.
Right.
Sarah, how important do you find like the feedback of people that come to the business? Do you find right now everyone wants that energy efficient stuff? Do you see that people are like reaching out to you, asking you questions on social media? Because there's probably a lot of people out there that are upgrading things and they have a lot of questions, and they probably reach out to you electronically to ask those things that probably encourage them to come into the store and look at things too.
Nick does a great job of, because he also does social media with me, because mm-hmm. he speaks to those questions a lot better than I do.
Right.
And so he does a great job responding, giving an explanation of how people can make their home more efficient, their business more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
He works closely with Ameren, with other utilities, because there are so many...
There's a lot of rebates things that they offer,
Yep, incentives right now. And he's on top of all that kind of stuff. So when people reach out, and we also have the team that goes out and tries to... educate people on what can change, just little changes that make a big difference.
Yeah. When you start marketing on social media, what kind of things do people like to talk about on there? And what are the things that you see are, you know, an effective way to get people to talk about the business?
Well, our primary demographic, our main customer is a woman.
Mm-hmm.
People love talking about homes, their home design, what lighting they have, what lighting they want. So a lot of times on our social media, we'll say, you know, what's your favorite light in your home? And people will put pictures. People will talk about, mm-hmm. I want this light. I saw this light. I want that. I want this. So I think a lot of times people respond to the latest designs, the latest trends. We go to Dallas Market in January and in June. And so we know what's up and coming and what's trending. And we'll put that on our social media, and people really respond to, oh, that's awesome. I'm not really a fan of that. And being in St. Louis, sometimes the trends take a little bit of time to trickle to the Midwest.
Mm-hmm. Big thanks to Metro Lighting for joining us on this program, The Business of Family Business. Now we look at adapting to changes in the industry with Jim Butler Chevrolet. You talk about digital. That was another big change in the industry, too. You said you were someone that was an early adopter, but it was maybe a little bit too early. Digital, now when it comes to a lot of different dealerships, you can't get away from a web specialist where you can just communicate with whoever you want at the dealership at any given time just by chatting with them online. And that leads to a lot of sales in the long run, too.
It does. About 75% of our business is done online.
Really? Right. 75%?
So, yeah. So we kind of pioneered, about 6 years ago, we pioneered a business development center approach. Mm-hmm. And basically, we allow our consumers, and when I talked about the digital age, it's very open, very transparent. So we feel, and we make the statement, every person, it doesn't matter if you're 92 years old coming to buy a car or you're 16 years old, we're assuming you've done all your research already, and there's a good chance you have. So everything's out in the open. Whatever questions you have, we can answer online via chat, via phone call. The Business Development Center is staffed almost 12 to 13 hours a day and 6 days a week. So it really helps answer those questions that people have, saying, okay, I see this online. What does this mean? What if you get this special, what does that mean? And we want to be able to answer those questions. And then we're almost to the point where 30% of our business we do sell from a Chevy perspective. We have a Kia store and now Maserati and Alfa and Fiat. We're selling in 32 different states, you know, from this area. So because of that, because of people can call or people can chat or people can email or they can click into our website and they can get the information they need. And most of the time, that's a great selling process because the consumer says, I know I want a Silverado. I know I want this color, and I know I want these features. You happen to have one. If you're going to treat me well, and the pricing's fairly open because it's out on the web, let's take it. We'll deliver it to them.
Yeah. So sometimes they're buying them strictly online. They're able to see them
online,
and then you can deliver it right there.
Absolutely, yeah. Concierge service.
Wow.
If I buy from an out of state and I buy from you, do I have to come to St. Louis to get the car? Do you bring it to me, or?
I'll bring it to you. It depends on what you like to do. So there's two things. So the most complicated part about buying a vehicle in today's world is your trade-in, payoffs, if you owe anything on your trade-in, and then the tax laws associated with registering the vehicles at your particular state, right? So we have experts that can put all that together for you. And then depending on what you want, some people say, no. I want to fly in, I want to see the truck, or I want to do this, or I want to get this accomplished, and then I'll drive it home. Fine, that works. I talked to a customer we had in North Carolina, and I asked him the question, because I always like to know, why did you do business with us? You know, you bought a truck, and he goes, well, be honest with you, I called five dealers before I called you guys. And you were the ones that answered the questions, you're the ones that gave us the pricing that we were looking for, and you said you'd deliver it to my home. So... seemed very easy to me. I knew what I wanted. It's just I couldn't get the service required along the way.
Yep.
And we were one of the five dealers that had exactly what he wanted in inventory, so he could get it right away.
Thanks again to Jim Butler Chevrolet, who joined us. We're looking back at some of those family business stories where they discuss how they adapted to changes in the industry. In the next segment, we'll hear from Johnny Max, Walter Knoll Florist, OK Hatchery, and also BookSource on this special edition of the Business of Family Business, presented by CMA Consulting. Welcome back to the Business of Family Business. I'm your host, Ryan Recker, and we have a special edition for you this weekend as we look back at some of those great family business stories that shared what their family business did when they were faced with changes in their industry or different ways to integrate new technology in order to adapt. Joining us in studio is Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. In this segment, we'll hear from Johnny Max, Walter Knoll Florist, OK Hatchery, and BookSource. And Dan Bean, I wanted to talk to you about some of those companies famously that had changed their business models in order to adapt over the years.
A business model would be Apple. Apple, I think, has transformed seven different industries. So Apple has been very much, by their own existence, a very disruptive factor in the world of business.
When a company changes to adapt, let's say a type 2, because things are not the way it used to be, is that always more difficult than a type 1 change where there might be a growth or a shrink in their business?
It is always more difficult. A continuous change, we have time, and we just do more or less. And so it is familiar. We're just doing more or less. a type 2 or discontinuous change, dealing with that is we're doing something new and different, and the ground rules and the perspective is different, and the frames of mind that we rely on, the rules of thumb we rely on, all the conventional wisdom we rely on, all of that has been thrown up in the air. And so we have to relearn everything as well as reinvent everything. And we got competitors trying to struggle with this too. So it's very much a time of very high and complex change.
First in this segment, let's hear the story of Johnny Max. You've been around and in business since the 80s. When did the internet become a factor into your guys' business? Because I got to imagine that was another major shift in the industry for you guys.
That was a very big one. In fact, when the tech bubble happened, we were all relieved, like I'm sure a lot of other retailers at the time, that kind of went, whew, and wiped our brow and said, I'm glad that that wasn't successful, and it came back with a vengeance.
So the tech bubble, you thought, wow, this is great. Now I don't have to worry about this whole internet thing.
Correct.
Wow. Yeah. So, but then eventually, of course, now it's integrated into almost every business.
Yes.
Yeah, you can't get away from that.
Right.
So what was that like embracing it, and when did you guys decide to do that?
I would say for about 4 or 5 years now, but have not put as much resources, energy needed into having a full-blown, if you will, successful e-commerce. What we have found is that it's a great bit of advertising for us and a resource for our customers who want to shop when we're not open to see what we have available. So we have, you know, a grandma or a mom or a dad that runs in with their iPhone stuck out and saying, this is what my grandson or my son wants. And they point to the picture of what's on our website.
Have you seen the sales, the online sales grow year after year?
I have in the industry and our particular website, not necessarily.
Okay. Because it seems like online sales, especially when you have major corporations like Amazon, for example, how hard is it to compete when you have these outside large companies that can offer some of those things that you've been offering locally for decades?
You know, we are very fortunate that you have to earn it, but we're very fortunate to live in St. Louis, where it's a very small, big town, in that if you earn the customer's service by servicing them, if you earn their business, they'll return to you. And so that's our always top of mind to separate ourselves from the internet, is to be able to be there as a resource to help our customers, not necessarily sell them anything, but to be there to help them for their needs. And we're able to fulfill those a lot of times.
That was Johnny Max sharing their story of adaptation and changes in the industry, also integration of new technology. Now joining us is Walter Knoll in Walter Knoll Florists. You mentioned earlier about millennials and how their purchasing is a little bit different. How has that helped you adjust your business model for the future?
Well, I don't know if it's helped us. I mean, we're trying our best to react to it. The millennials are not our best customers now. So right now, our main customers are boomers and X's. Always, like whenever we're talking to, you know, marketing specialists or ad agencies, they want to know who our ideal customer is. And they do zero in on soccer moms and, women 45 to 55. Mm-hmm. But really, everybody buys flowers. You know, they have different occasions they buy them for, different events that take place, whether it be a sympathy event for someone that has passed, or whether it be Valentine's Day, where it is part of relationship management to have shown that you cared and have the flowers there on time. So we really need to sell everybody. And, you know, it's one reason we're always very careful with, like, our political beliefs, because there really is no room for that in business, because I can't afford to alienate anybody. Mm-hmm. You know, I need everybody to want to buy flowers from me. You know, there's some people that can sit there, you know, where they choose a particular sect, a religious sect, and they say we're the most, you know, religious of this type of company. And that may work for them, but it doesn't work for me, because I need everyone to buy from me. Mm-hmm. I need everybody to buy from me based on whatever social economic status they're on, whatever their ethnic background is. You know, they still, whatever their political beliefs are, you know, I still want them all as customers, and I'm going to do my best to service them.
Thanks to Walter Noel Flores, who joined us on this program, looking at ways that family businesses adapt to changes in the industry. Up next is the OK Hatchery. Are there clients that you've known for decades?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's really fun. I think sometimes my boys sit back and start shaking their head because I know somebody and we start talking to somebody. Because I've waited on customers, I had customers over the years from the Kirkwood area, even with classmates from school, they know they can come to OK Hatchery and I'll get the word out that so-and-so is in town, you know.
The boys, I keep calling them the boys.
They're
How old
are
they're
they
really
now?
Men. they're over 50. So The idea of, do we reinvent ourselves again? You're constantly reinventing yourself into the electric world. Do we become
like a digital world or something?
A digital world.
Yeah.
Virtual reality was one of the things that came up, where you do travel through the store virtually.
Yeah.
Some people have more ambitions to build empires, and we just have a ambition to run a business.
And the community around you and the people you work with.
It's like the old mom and pop and the kids, and it's not a big business, but it's one we are proud of.
And our next goal is to make it to the 100 years.
It's coming up.
Yes. It was 90 years last year.
Yeah. Wow. So that's actually right around the corner.
It is.
Not too far away. You're right.
You said that your mother was a big part of the success in the business.
She was a great help to my dad, and she had to, you know, get away from homemaking at times, particularly during hatchery season. I mean, they worked 15 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
And as a kid, I can remember growing up, mom didn't cook dinner in those days. We went out to eat almost every night because she had to be down, and she was helping when the chickens were being hatched. She helped
She had to candle the eggs.
Yeah, big sacrifices,
Call the chickens and get them prepared. But
thanks again to the OK Hatchery and the business, a family business, a special edition this weekend looking at adapting to changes in the industry and how family businesses made it work. Our last guest for this segment is BookSource. What have you seen so far when it comes to the competition with the rise of the internet, people looking online and places like Amazon that distribute books too? How has that changed the way you do business?
It has, but our market is much more geared toward the elementary market. And so teachers are looking for any bargain they can. A lot of times they don't have money and they are spending an average of about $346 a year of their own money, going to garage sales, going to flea markets, doing whatever they can. And we, you know, our books are quality books that we're trying to find out, what do they really want to teach? How good are their readers in their classroom? And finding out so that we get the right books in the hands. I'd rather have them have fewer books, but the right books, so that the kids actually are reading on level and reading on par, because there's nothing more important to our company. It's not about selling books. It's about teaching a kid to read. And that's how, you know, it's like the janitor from NASA who said that he's putting a man on the moon. And I think we're the same way. We want to teach kids how to read.
We'll be back one last time as we look at different ways family businesses adapt to changes in the industry. The Krieghauser brothers will join us. Also, Lori Shoes to share their story. Big thanks to BookSource, who you just heard from. On the Business of Family Business, it's presented by CMA Consulting. If you're a family business owner, you know what it's like when it's time to make that decision to transition into retirement. And then you're looking at your family members and other leaders in your organization and wonder, who is ready to step up? Is it the next generation? Is it someone from the outside? You have to make those decisions. You want to make sure your company that you work so hard for is in the right hands. CMA Consulting, they can help you make that decision. They lead a multidisciplinary team to help family businesses unify the next generation and develop them to be effective owners. From talent experts all the way to banking and tax and legal and risk management, they excel in increasing the odds of a successful generational transition and, of course, family harmony. If you haven't looked at their website and learned more about them yet, you should. CMAconsult.com. Or if you feel like giving them a call, you can too. 314-721-1860. How about you give them a call, meet with CMA for a complimentary, no obligation meeting to discuss your family business? It doesn't hurt for you to ask that question. CMA, What can you do for our family business? That website again, cmaconsult.com. The longer you wait, the harder it gets. You know that. Make the connection, cmaconsult.com. Welcome back to this special edition of the Business of Family Business. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. We're joined in studio with Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, who presents this program. And we're going back through some of the great family business stories that we've shared on this show in the past. And we're pulling out some of those stories that talk about adapting to changes in the industry or integration of new technology, as all companies are faced with that. Even when you hear these stories of family companies that have been together for over a century. In this segment, we'll hear from Krieghauser Brothers and also Lori Shoes. But first, a little while ago, Dan, you were talking about discontinuous changes and how some family businesses adapt to that.
So some examples of what causes discontinuous change are a change in the business model, a dramatic change in technology, a fundamental change in a delivery system, or maybe a regulatory change. And I'll give an example of some of those. Mm-hmm. So in the 1980s, the Reagan administration deregulated the airline industry. And now prices were no longer set by the government or a rate board. Every airline could set them as they wanted and offer as many flights as they wanted. And Eastern and TWA and a whole lot of other airlines that were classic names are been gone for a long time. Mm-hmm. So that deregulation can be a discontinuous change. Amazon is a discontinuous change in the delivery system, and it's wrecking havoc in retail. Cell phones and technology. AT&T is nowhere near what it once was in terms of being a solo player or being granted the ability to operate as a monopoly when there were copper landlines all over the United States or the world.
Ways that they've adapted to the industry. First, we'll hear from Krieghauser Brothers. So, Trey, when you had some time to think about what you would maybe do differently, so every generation when they come in, they kind of feel like they may have some new ideas, different ways to operate the business. In this case, you guys were starting from scratch, and you had the opportunity to do something new based on the vision you guys had. In this case, it was completely different from what a lot of people have seen in the area. So what was your guys' vision, and how did you go about creating that?
We could simply, what we would do is we would look at the newspaper. Mm-hmm. And we would see, this is what this family has chosen to do. This family has chosen to do this, 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 and this. And we would realize that, my gosh, there are a lot of people choosing services that we could specialize in. And they would not actually have to call a funeral home per se to have these services. Mm-hmm. We could specialize in any number of services, which people were choosing more and more frequently and are today. Years ago, in the early 60s, about 3% or so of people would choose cremation. Mm-hmm. Well, today, nationwide, it's up to 50%. Mm-hmm. In our industry, now over a long period of time, it's 1% a year, let's say. Over time, it has a cumulative effect and basically undermines the old way of doing business.
Yeah.
It's hard for an owner of a funeral home, any business that gets established, people become comfortable with the way they're doing things.
Right.
I mean, it's difficult to introduce things that are significantly different.
Yeah.
We didn't have that burden. We didn't have to throw away the old business model. We started with a new one.
Right. Let me ask you about that new business model, Keith. So when you guys were coming up with how you were going to operate as a company, what were some of those things that you took into consideration that would be different than what would have traditionally happened?
Traditional funeral home is probably a 10 to 12,000 square foot building with rooms for parlors, chapels, gathering areas, large parking lots, just a lot of overhead to maintain that type of business. Mm-hmm. When we decided to try to service a certain niche of families that didn't have the need of using a funeral home as a gathering place, we knew that we could provide the professional services and the ability, we could provide the services that they need through a much lower overhead operation. We operate out of an office in a retail center in Brentwood. There's parking right out front, so it's very easy for our customers to get in and out of our office. All that we have to have there is our business office, a couple of conference rooms, and a casket and urn selection area. Mm-hmm. So we can meet the needs of those families that engage our services without the higher overhead of a typical neighborhood funeral home.
Yeah. You just heard from the Krieghauser Brothers, now Lori Shoes. When it comes to the business by itself, how have you seen it change over the years? Because we're talking about decades and decades of selling shoes. It's had to have changed over the years.
It has. I got involved. Like I said, I was always involved in the business in some capacity. One thing I will tell you about our family, we are born and bred St. Louisans. We obviously went to, you know, elementary school, grade school, high school, and we all went to colleges here in St. Louis. During that, though, the main interest for us, or I know from my point of view, was working at the store and then kind of going to school and such along with that. But the difference was, we were very, to us, what was very important was the better grade footwear sizes and widths and fit and making the customer happy. And today, you hear that as a survival tactic for a lot of storefronts today who did not or have not followed that logic of service and those kind of things. So it's everything does come around, and I think they use a 10 to 15 year basis for how things repeat.
At Lori's, what's the largest shoe you guys sell?
We carry up to 18.
18?
Yes, we carry 18, and we do. In fact, I've got a lot of stories because, I was fitting shoes to some of the St. Louis Hawks way back when. I think I was 13, and I was fitting shoes. Ed McCauley was a customer, and I'll just remember trying to sell him a pair of Converse All-Stars, and it was just fun. I just was fortunate enough to have met some of the greatest people my whole life, but it was a ball. It was still the sit and fit, but we met so many people because it was, as I said earlier, a lot of what we call standalone type of shoe stores was very prominent back in the 60s and 70s. Yeah. The 80s, you start seeing big box off price, and we actually never got there. I think we started in the 51 as that kind of concept, then we changed it over the years in the 50s and late 50s and 60s to full service and better grade. But it definitely dominated what we did, and our service got better and our selection got bigger.
Like, how often does someone come in to ask for an size 18? That can't happen too often.
You would be surprised how many people out there have what we call unusual feet. We have widths up to 6Es, and these are people that fortunately, you know, have such a wide foot that when they walk in, you automatically are looking, going, my gosh, that is a challenge. And we end up fitting a lot of these people. 18s, we probably get a couple a month, and more often we get a lot of 15s and 16s. Mm-hmm. So you'd be surprised. There's a lot of people who are looking for those, but again, in the world of big box, you don't see the suppliers providing that.
I want to thank all of our family businesses that joined us in this special: Winco Windows, Niebling Auto, Metro Lighting, Jim Butler Chevrolet, Johnny Max, Walter Knoll Florist, OK Hatchery, Booksource, Krieg Hauser Brothers, and Lori Shoes, sharing their stories of how their family businesses adapted to changes in the industry. If you'd like to listen to any of those individual stories, it's very easy for you to find them at KMOX.com. Just go to the podcast section and click on The Business of Family Business. Also, a special thank you to Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, who joins us in studio. Make sure to check them out online, CMAconsult.com. And better yet, if you know a great family business in the area and the region that would like to share their story on this program, we're always looking for new family businesses to highlight. Reach out to Dan Bean at cmaconsult.com. The website again, cmaconsult.com. Just let them know you're interested in being on this program, The Business of Family Business on KMOX. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. We'll see you again soon.